Now here is your moderator, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, Debbie, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. We hope you are having a lovely Sunday out there. We also hope you can spare us an hour of your very valuable time, because Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, we're hoping that you will call and participate with a question or answer. It's really quite simple. All you have to do is call one of two numbers, and those are area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. Or toll-free. Yes, we still have a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. That is 866-798-8255. And as I say every week, at least while the pandemic's going on, and I know you're home, feel free to give us a call as early as possible in the program. Sometimes we do get a little bit crowded at the end of the show, and we want to take as many calls as we can. So please call us early if that is all possible for you. Again, with a question or answer, 415-841-4134, or toll-free, 866-798-8255. We'll be covering current events, movies, history, literature, geography, television, radio, and just about everything else. So again, just give us a call. Just a reminder of our email address, which is mindsovermatter1@gmail.com. So that is MINDSOVERMATTER1. That is the numeral one. So that is mindsovermatter1@gmail.com. Feel free to email us any old time. If I had somebody email me last week asking us to repeat the answer to a question, and I was very happy to do that. So feel free to do that yourself if you would like clarification on something. And, of course, if you'd like to hear us in live stream in your area, all you have to do is go to kalw.org, where it's going on right now. And, of course, the podcast should be up because of Debbie's great efficiency. And that should be available after our show tonight, also at kalw.org. And, of course, it'll be there in numerous places, but start with KLW. I'm sure they would appreciate that. Okay. Hopefully my two compatriots are there. Say hello, please.
Hello, please.
Okay. Hey, hello.
Yeah, thank you, Gracie. And, okay, we're going to start with the round of introductions. And here's the first. Kira Pace considered erecting a monolith in her living room but opted for a Christmas tree instead.
Yeah, I don't know that we had the ceiling clearance for a whole monolith. Joshua Cosman is eager for the chance to demonstrate some 2020 hindsight.
And our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, is glad that for the 12 days of Christmas this year, it's only one president raving.
All right. And all that being said, we will start with Kira Pace.
All right. I'll get my Josh question in early. There are 240.
Not going anywhere.
There are 244 Stradivarius violins in the world right now, but only 5 extant guitars, and only one of those extant guitars is actually playable. What I would like to know is the name of the world's only remaining playable Stradivarius guitar.
You mean the guitar itself has a name?
It does.
Is it named after a person who owned it at one point?
I don't know. I can
like the Julian Bream guitar or something like that, you know.
I was going to guess the Segovia guitar.
There you go.
But
all right.
It is not.
Huh. I don't know what else we could base the name on it.
Yeah.
If not the owner.
Pepe Romero. Pepe
yes.
Romero guitar.
Sharon Isbin guitar. Mm. Don't know.
Okay. Yes, it does get its name from somebody. So that is the case.
But you're not sure whether this person it was famous for playing the guitar.
It is a previous owner of the guitar.
Previous owner of the guitar.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So it could be somebody that just collected rare guitar.
Yeah, it was somebody who bought it from a descendant. So not the original owner of the guitar, but a previous owner.
All right. Why don't you repeat the question, if you would?
Sure. There's only one playable Stradivarius guitar that is in the world right now. Just the one. What is its name?
Okay. And Josh, why don't you go ahead, too?
Sure. Let's see. Where should we start? Pulitzer Prize for Literature. There have been three authors who won the Pulitzer Prize for Literature with reduplicated initials, the same initial, first and last name. One was Josephine Johnson, who, as you know, won at 24. She was the youngest winner of the Pulitzer Prize for Literature for her 1935 novel, Now in November, which probably Dana has read, but I have not, and I don't know anything about it. So the other two are writers that you are more likely to have heard of. These are the only two other writers with the same first and last initial to win the Pulitzer Prize for Literature.
So no poetry.
That's correct. Okay. These are both novelists.
All right. And how far back are we going?
One all the way back and one fairly recent. The one all the way back is the one you're slightly more likely to have heard of. Let's put it this way. I feel absolutely sure that you've heard of the earlier one. I think it's likely, but not certain, that you know the subsequent one,
okay,
the more recent one.
This requires a certain amount of thought.
Yeah, it's good. That's all why right. I put it out early, because you got to do a little wool gathering.
And why don't you just give the question once more?
Sure. We're looking for writers who have won the Pulitzer Prize for Literature with reduplicated initials. That is the same first and last name initials. Josephine Johnson, the 1935 winner for Now in November, was one. But we don't remember her today. We do remember these other two.
Well, I think Margaret Mitchell's one, right?
That is one, exactly. Right. Give yourself a bell for all that, Dan.
Or the wind done gone, right?
With the wind done gone. And the other one is, let's put it, I'll tell you, it was within this millennium, the current millennium.
Okay. All right. There you go. And let's see. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Ever Matter.
Well, hello there.
Hi.
This is Danny and Sandra in Albania, as in Albany, sorry.
Okay.
I've got a couple. I don't have any answers to the Segovia guitar. I was hoping it was something like Eric Clapton, but no.
Stradivarius. Anyway, sorry.
Hey, I have a geography question and a musical question here.
Okay.
So the geography question is short. There are about 40 landlocked countries in the world. But of all of them, Austria has a unique quality related to its being landlocked. And what is that quality?
Most ports in a landlocked country?
Nope.
So it is not a landlocked country surrounded by other landlocked countries.
Oh, you are. Yes. Yes, it is. In fact, it is the only landlocked country that borders five other landlocked countries.
And
I suppose you can name them. But
are they all
Austria?
Is Austria completely? Because I know what is the. This has come up before. Josh, I'm sure you remember this.
Yeah, there's. I thought there was there's some factoid about the doubly landlocked countries.
Right.
And one of them is Kyrgyzstan. And one of them is somewhere in Africa.
Liechtenstein was one.
Oh, maybe so.
Yeah.
So Austria is connected to Liechtenstein and Switzerland.
But Italy, too.
Well, Italy's not landlocked, though.
No.
He said there's five landlocked countries around.
Oh, so you're not saying that all the countries that's... Well, wait a minute. Are you saying that all the countries that surround Austria are landlocked? Or
I think they might be, but no.
Okay.
There are five of the landlocked countries. It's the only one that can claim that.
Slovakia, Czechia, and...
Well, Hungary, of course.
And Hungary.
Boom. And Hungary. There you go. All right, good.
Okay. All right.
Deserves a bell for that one.
All right.
Okay.
That's good.
So this is the other one. We've just been hanging out with Minds Over Matter for a couple of years and enjoying it thoroughly. And every time it comes on, I hear your theme song, the intro song. And you've probably done something with the intro song before, but I've got something amusing here. So the intro song, as you doubtless know, is got to be This or That, and it was written by Sonny Skylar, and your version was recorded in 1945 by Benny Goodman and his orchestra.
Right.
Okay. But Sonny Skylar, had two other musical claims to fame. In 1934, as a singer for George Hall and his Hotel Taft Orchestra, he charted a hit with a song that most Americans can sing all the way through, and it's actually kind of
seasonal song. We had an appropriate time of year to think about this.
Well, 34 is Santa Claus is coming to town.
Oh, dang, you are good. Of course you. Okay, well, I've got another one.
Okay.
He also co-wrote a song in 1944 that's been covered hundreds of times, but most interestingly, perhaps, by the Beatles on their unsuccessful Decca demo in 1962. And what is that song?
Okay. So this was a standalone song. It was never from a show or a movie or anything like that.
It was not written for a show or a movie, but it appeared in some movies.
Okay.
The only oldie that I know that the Beatles recorded, but I think it's earlier than 44, is Ain't She Sweet.
It is before 44, but no, it's another one.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't know.
No.
All right. Well, it was also recorded by Dale Evans, but that's not going to tell you much either. All right. I will tell you. It was Besame Mucho.
Oh,
really?
Okay.
He didn't write the melody. He wrote the English words.
Oh.
And so he wrote the English words, and it was first recorded in 1944 by Dale Evans and her Cowboys. The Cowboy and the Senorita was the movie it was in.
All right. Besame Mucho. Yeah.
So I just thought that's got to be one, you know, the weirdest three songs to credit one one songwriter. Very amazing. All right. That's it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. Feel free to give us a call. The two numbers are area code 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. Our panel tonight would be Kira Pace, technical editor, Joshua Cosman, classical music critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. And you're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That is KALW. Your local public radio station. All right, let me give you a couple questions here. You might get this very, very quickly. We'll see. What are the two longest words in the presidential oath of office?
God, it's so long since I took that.
I know. What are the two longest words?
I would assume Constitution would be one.
Constitution is the longest. That's 12 letters, yes. What's the second longest?
How about faithfully?
Very good. Very good. All right. I'm glad you got that very quickly. Yes, the two longest words in the presidential oath of office, which is only 35 words, are faithfully and the Constitution. Okay. In that case, I'm going to give you four rivers that run through state capitals. I want you to tell me which state capital they are or which state capitals they run through. Okay, here we go. So these are
some of them more than one?
No. There's only one river for each state capital.
Got it.
So, again, these are rivers that run through four different state capitals. So, number one, we have the St. James River. Number two, we have the White River. Number three, we have the Kennebec River. And number four, we have the Pearl River. So once more, these are rivers that run through various state capitals in the U.S. Number one, we have the St. James River. Number two, we have the White River. Number three, we have the Kennebec River. And number four, we have the Pearl River.
I think I can do one.
Okay.
One more than that.
I think Pearl is just Hawaii, right?
It is not. No.
No. Mm-mm. Okay.
Huh. Nope.
Interesting. That was my guess, too.
I was wrong for you, so you're
thank
welcome.
You. So yeah, I don't know any of these. My proven to be unreliable gut, which also told me Pearl was in Hawaii, says St. James runs through Columbus, Ohio.
No.
Okay.
So again, these are rivers that run through state capitals. Tell me the state capitals involved. Number one, the St. James River. Number two, the White River. Number three, the Kennebec River, and number four, the Pearl River. Okay, I'll give you one more. I don't know if I'm going to get grief on this or not. These are the ones I could find, so you can call me on it if it's not true. I have a list of seven countries named after people who either lived or visited there. Okay, So these are seven countries named after people who either lived or visited there. They didn't have to be countries when that person was there, but the country is named after them. So, for instance, you know, Philip II obviously never visited the Philippines. So just to establish that, that we know of. All right. So give me the seven countries that are named after people who either lived or visited there.
Oh, I thought. Oh, so we have to come up with.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And now you have to tell me who the person is too, because I mean the countries are named after some of them, so I can't give you the names of the countries.
Of course, that makes sense now that you say it. Yes. All right, this is going to take some thought. I'll just walk away now and leave you guys to do the show while I think about these.
Okay. Kira, would you like to kick a guess?
No, I also need – I thought you were going to give some people and we were going to give some country names. So
no, because if I gave you the people's names, I would give
right, which makes sense. I just have to – yeah. So I also need to think.
Okay. So once more, I found seven countries in the world that are named after people who either lived there for a period of time or visited there. For instance, as I mentioned before, the Philippines is not named after is named after Philip II of Spain, but he never visited or lived there.
What about Bolivia?
Bolivia is one.
Ooh,
yes.
Good.
Simon Bolivar. Correct.
And I was going to say Kiribati, the island group in the Pacific, which is named after Gilbert.
Very good. Yes. Thomas Gilbert, who the Kiribati is in their language. It's named after Thomas Gilbert. Yes. All right. Very good. Okay. So that's two. And we have five left on that list. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Maybe that's me.
It is you.
Okay, great. God, is it the Townsend guitar? The only guitar Pete Townsend had the sense not to smash?
No, that was fortunately not a Stradivarius. Okay.
All right. Here's where I want to. I want to get this out of my mind. I'm still thinking about what two linguistic errors were made on every show of Jeopardy.
You mean it's still ongoing? Is what you're
on every Jeopardy show? Mm-hmm. There are two linguistic errors.
Anything tied into what is or who is or any of that?
No.
Sort of thing? Okay.
So it's in the introduction or something, or the.
No, it's while you're playing the game. There are two linguistic mistakes.
Well, I'm sure we've all watched Jeopardy over our lifetimes.
I know, and there are two linguistic mistakes in the course of playing the game.
Don't know.
No.
Well, since daily means once per day, only one of them can be the correct use, and then the other two daily doubles are not daily. There can only be one daily double, because daily means once per day.
All right.
Okay.
Just an interesting little thing. Okay, let me barrel through this. This should be a lot of fun. How many, and bear with me, because there's a great payoff at the end, I guarantee. How many bricks are in a perch, a masonry perch?
Are you talking about that? Well, I wish I could describe it, but it's that carrier that the mason has. It's a flat. There are two flat surfaces, and you pile bricks on it, and you carry it around.
Perch is a wall. It's a part of a wall. The wall is 12 inches thick, 18 inches high, and 16 and a half feet long. That's the important number. And it's made up of, well, I'll tell you, 500 bricks. Now, remember that. 16 and a half inches, 16 and a half feet long is equivalent to what other unit of measurement? And if you've ever been on a farm, I've met one person who said, yeah, the surveyor came out and used one of those.
What a furlong.
Hold that in your head. It's coming up. 16 and a half feet is equivalent to a surveyor's what?
A rod.
Yes.
Good.
A rod. How many? Okay, four rods equals what?
That's the furlong.
Not yet.
Ah. Four rods.
Four rods is a surveyor's what?
No.
40, 64,
a surveyor's
66
chain.
Feet.
Chain.
66 feet is a surveyor's chain. Now, take out that answer, because 10 surveyor's chains equals what?
A furlong, the length of a furrow.
The length of a furrow, a furlong, that's what furlong means, the length of a furrow. And a furlow is what? A furlong is an eighth of what?
An acre.
Eighth of a mile.
Oh.
A furlong is an eighth of a mile. So that's the big payoff. A lot of people don't know that. A furlong, length of a furrow, is an eighth of a mile. So I took you from the length of a brick to the length of a mile.
Wow.
You know?
All
that's
right.
Why metric is nonsense. Once you know what our customary system is based on, it's so beautifully integrated and built into our fields and the borders of our land. We're all surveyed based on the brick, the perch, the rod, the chain, the surveyor's chain, the furlong, and you go all the way up to a mile. It's not arbitrary. It's a great system, beautifully integrated.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. And Kira, I think it's your turn.
All right. I also have a literature question for you guys, but it's a little different from Josh's. I'm going to give you some titles of autobiographies, and I just want you to tell me who wrote them. So I've got eight. So here we go. The first one is called Born a Crime. Born a Crime. The second autobiography is called Private Parts. Next, I have Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me? Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me? Next, The Story of My Experiments with Truth. Again, that's The Story of My Experiments with Truth. Number five, I've got How to Talk Dirty and Influence People. How to Talk Dirty and Influence People. Next, I've got What I Talk About When I Talk About Running. Again, What I Talk About When I Talk About Running. Let's do The Year of Magical Thinking. That's The Year of Magical Thinking. And finally, Why Me? The last one is called Why Me? So, once again, that's Born a Crime, Private Parts, Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me? The Story of My Experiments with Truth, How to Talk Dirty and Influence People, What I Talk About When I Talk About Running, The Year of Magical Thinking, and Why Me?
Josh, go ahead if you want.
You go ahead. To my surprise, I know a bunch of these. So I didn't think I was going to know any of them.
Is The Year of Magical Thinking, is that Joan Didion?
It is.
Yeah.
That is correct.
And
that's about.
Who's the one snapping their pen out there? I can hear that.
Oh, that's me. I'm sorry. I'll stop.
All right. And Born a Crime is Trevor Noah.
That is correct.
And Debbie
also
wanted passed along the Private Parts, which is Howard Stern.
It is Howard Stern. Right. Nice job, Debbie.
There we go.
Okay, so Josh, why don't you give me two, and we'll leave the other two to the audience.
I got two only. They took all the other ones. Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me is the wonderful title of Mindy Kaling's book.
Yes,
I was called to a Zoom meeting the other day, and I didn't have the link, and I was just sitting there waiting for somebody to send me the link, and I finally just took a screenshot of that book cover and sent it to all the participants because I didn't know where they were. How to Talk Dirty and Influence People is a book that I pulled off my parents' shelf when I was about 10 or 11 and read with equal parts fascination and incomprehension. That is Lenny Bruce's autobiography.
That is correct. Lenny Bruce. So the ones we have left, and I'm actually going to add one in there for the audience, just so they have a couple to work with. The Story of My Experiments with Truth, What I Talk About When I Talk About Running, Why Me, and I'm adding Total Recall. So the audience, you can have total recall.
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter. Are you there, caller? All right, next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Ed. How are you?
Good.
Very good. So my question about, of course, that horrible situation with the virus, what is the word vaccine comes from?
From cows.
Yes.
Cows. Vaca, which means cow. Very good. Okay, so I'm going to give you three names. The co-founder and the chairman of Moderna and the chairman of Pfizer, and also the head of the U.S. government for developing vaccine. I will give you their, well, I'll give you their, well, what do they have in common? These three people, what do they have in common? They have something in common. What do you think?
What do they have in common? Is this a race or a physical appearance question?
No.
I
mean, it's related a bit, but it is not really. So remember, this is the most important people. These people are about to save billions of lives
right.
because of their vaccines.
But
all the three, if I give you their name, it may be a hint. Okay, for Moderna, his name is Nobar Afien. For Pfizer, his name is Albert Bourla, B-O-U-R-L-A. And for the government vaccine, his name is Monsef Mohammed Slowi.
Are they all from Egypt?
No, I wish.
Okay.
but close.
Are they all Middle Eastern or, is this maybe close. Muslim? Are they all Muslim?
No.
Well, okay.
No. I was just to give you the answer because I have a footnote to that. They're all immigrants.
Oh.
Mm.
Right.
They're immigrants. Okay, I'll tell you which country, each one of them. So Moderna founder was born in Beirut, Lebanon. So, and also Mohammed, Nassif Mohammed was born in Morocco. And then the one for Pfizer was a Greek, was born in Greece. So what do they have in common? They're all immigrants, remember?
Right.
They're all immigrants. So now here, Mr. Trump brought us a virus with only one case in January 22nd. Now is 16,280,000 dead Americans, and he was banning Muslim or immigrants, right? You know, so this is really very, very, very important point. This country was built by immigrants, and it's terrible. So I'll just repeat the name again very quickly. Moderna, his name is Nobar Afien, and for Pfizer, his name is Albert Bourla, and for the head of the U.S. Vaccine Department, his name is Monsef Mohammed Slowi.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And Josh, I think it's your turn.
It's my turn. And before I take my turn, I wanted to come back around on your country's question
yes.
and ask you, first of all, because I'm sort of blanking on this, did Amerigo Vespucci go with Columbus or did he stay back home in Italy? I don't really – I just know his name. I don't know what he did or who he was.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
I don't care.
Sure.
Is he one of your seven? It's not on the list anyway.
Let's put it that way.
All right. Okay. Here's another one that may or may not be on your list because it may or may not be. But the country of Israel is named after the biblical patriarch Jacob, who, if he actually existed and is not just a sort of a tribal totem, would have lived there in
yes,
the land of Canaan.
And I have that on the list.
Very good. Oh, okay. All right.
Okay. Yes, and I went as far as to assume that he was a real person. And Yes, okay, there we go.
Yeah, that may or may not be accurate. All right. Presidential pardons have been in the news lately for a variety of reasons. My question to you is, which two presidents issued the fewest pardons during their respective terms in office, and which president issued by far the most pardons during his term of office? So two presidents who issued the fewest pardons during their terms in office, and which president issued by far the most pardons during his term in office?
So Would this have any bearing on, let's say, somebody who died a month into their presidency? Like,
well, I'm not speculating about the reasons why. I'm just asking you for the president.
All right, then I'll say William Henry Harrison issued the fewest pardons.
He was one of two. That's correct. Right. Do you know how many?
No, definitely.
Zero.
Zero.
For the very reason that you say. He was only in office for a month. And who else issued zero?
Well, let's see. Zero.
Is it somebody earlier, maybe before presidential pardons really took off?
No. The next fewest was Washington, who did 16.
How about James A. Garfield?
That is correct. Well done.
All right, there you go.
Only in office for 6 months. Right. How about the most pardons?
How about Franklin Roosevelt then?
Good guess, but not correct.
All right.
But Ford.
No.
How about Bill Clinton?
No.
All right. No, just be guessing on that.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we'll leave it out there. So William Henry Harrison and James Garfield issued neither of them issued any pardons, mostly because they didn't have the time. And we're looking for the president who issued by far the largest number of pardons during his term in office.
Okay. And the two numbers to join us here with a question or answer are area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. Let's repeat any questions that haven't been answered yet. Kira, we'll start with you.
I'd like to know the name of the world's only remaining playable Stradivarius guitar. And also, I've given you some autobiography titles. I like the person who wrote the autobiographies. The titles I have left are The Story of My Experiments with Truth, Total Recall, What I Talk About When I Talk About Running, and Why Me?
I'm looking for, as I said, the president who issued by far the largest number of presidential pardons during his time in office, and also the novelist who won the Pulitzer Prize for Literature, who has the same first and last initials like Josephine Johnson and Margaret Mitchell, who are the other ones on that list.
All right. And I gave you four rivers that run through state capitals in the U.S. I want you to tell me what state capitals those are. So then these are four rivers that run through four different state capitals. Number one, the St. James River. Number two, the White River. Number three, the Kennebec River. And number four, the Pearl River.
Can you spell Kennebec?
Sure. K-E-N-N-E-B-E-C.
That sounds New England. How about, let's say Maine.
That is correct. And what's the capital of Maine?
Augusta.
All right. There you go. Yes. Kennebec River runs through Augusta, Maine. Very good.
Sweet.
And, there are seven countries that I was able to find that were named after people who either lived or visited there. Just to give you an idea, so far we have Bolivia, Simon Bolivar, Israel, Jacob, and Kiribati, which is Thomas Gilbert. It's Kiribati in their language. That's Thomas Gilbert becomes what's the word I'm looking for?
Kiribati.
Thank you. And excuse me. So, what are the other five countries? Let's see. One, two, three, four countries on that list. Okay. All right, I'm going to give you one question, English language question here. These are words that have largely fallen out of use in English, thanks to a list provided by the Oxford English Dictionary. And I have heard of some of them, but they're not in common use anymore. So see if you can tell me what they mean. So again, these are words that have largely fallen out of use in English, but let's see if you can remember or come up with an idea of what they mean. So number one, coxcomb. I'll be happy to spell any of them for you. That's C-O-X-C-O-M-B, coxcomb. Number two, Moon Calf, which I've only heard in a W.C. Fields film. Moon as in M-O-O-N-C-A-L-F. Number three, Nithing, which is N-I-T-H-I-N-G, Nithing. Number four, Peterman, P-E-T-E-R-M-A-N. Number five, Senate, or Senite, excuse me, S-E-N-N-I-G-H-T. And my favorite, number six, which is Magdalene. Magdalene, M-A-G-D-A-L-E-N. So again, these are words that have largely fallen out of use in English. Tell me what you think they mean. Number one, coxcomb. Number two, mooncalf. Number three, nithing. Number four, Peterman. Number five, Senite. Number six, Magdalene. Yes.
Kira?
No. Also, is it Magdalene? It's not Maudlin, right?
Well, you might be right. I'm taking it in a very doctrinaire way. So.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, I have nothing.
All right.
Well, so the easiest one is Senite, which is just a week, but the V has gone away.
Right.
It's a seven night, just like it's half of a fortnight.
Good. That's right.
And a moon calf is someone sort of young and naive and inexperienced, I believe.
Yes, roughly. A foolish person, basically.
A foolish person.
When you get right down there. Yes, very good.
And I think a coxcomb is a coward, isn't it?
No.
No? A knave of some kind? All right.
No, can't.
I mean, it's, all right, not close enough.
Fair all right. Enough. So, yes, a moon calf is a foolish person. A senite is a weak. So, all right, and let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, is this me?
It is you.
This is Herb in Ashland, Oregon.
Hi, Herb.
Happy birthday to Dave Brubeck, who was born 100 years ago today, December 6, 1920. And lived to the one day short of his 92nd birthday. So anyway, my question is, there's one day of the year which is unofficially the Dave Brubeck Day. It's the holiday to his fans. What day of the year is it?
Is it a time signature?
It must be May 4th, right?
Yeah.
That is correct.
Very good.
Yeah. As it refers to his greatest hit, which is Take Five, which is in, of course, 5/4 time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's May the 4th.
That's great.
Okay. Let me get to the rivers. The White River, I know it's in the Ozarks, so it must be Little Rock, Arkansas. Is that correct?
No, not as far as I know.
Okay. The Pearl River is in Jackson, Mississippi.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, the St. James, I wonder if you're referring to the James River, which flows through Richmond, Virginia.
It is not the James River.
Not the James. Okay. No. And the only other thing I want to mention is the word mooncalf is in The Tempest, where it refers to Caliban. And they call him Mooncalf because he's something from another world. He sees somebody they'd never seen before.
I don't know.
I don't know the more modern usages, but I know it's in The Tempest.
My only recollection of it is in The Bank Dick. W.C. Fields asks his son-in-law, says, "You don't want to be a jabber now or a moon calf, do you?" So, yes, that's how I'm familiar with it.
Anyway, I'm pretty sure it is in Shakespeare's The Tempest. Okay, that's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate
Thanks.
It.
Thanks.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Feel free to give us a call with a question or answer, 415-841-4134, or toll free, 866-798-8255. Yes, did I get in the way of somebody? Was somebody going to mention? No? Okay.
No.
All right. And let's go to a call then. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, Dana. It's Megan in San Francisco.
Hi, Megan.
I have a couple guesses for you on the countries named after people. How about the Cook Islands?
That's not a country.
Okay.
That's a territory, I don't believe.
All right. Well, semantics on that one. And the White River, is that Idaho?
It is not.
Okay. And then I have a question for you. We know from the intro that Kira wanted a monolith in her living room instead of a Christmas tree, in line with current events. But as you know, ancient Egyptian obelisks are monolithic. So Cleopatra's Needle is the name shared by three ancient Egyptian obelisks that are in three cities outside of Egypt. What are those cities?
Right. Well, I think New York is one, right?
That's correct. It's in Central Park.
Yeah.
One I think is in the Louvre, isn't it? In Paris?
There is one in Paris. It's not in the Louvre.
Oh, right. My bad. But it's in Paris.
Right. Yes. Yes. And then the third one, it's not, is it London by any chance?
It is in London. It is the twin of the obelisk in Central Park, and it's on the banks of the Thames.
Okay. Yeah, I couldn't have told you exactly where it is. Okay. All right, good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That's all I got for you guys.
All right.
Have
thanks,
a good night.
Robin. Bye-bye. And Kira, do you have a relatively short question?
Sure.
Okay.
I'd like to know what the first Summer Olympics in which both women and men were allowed to compete in every sport, and not every event, just every sport, and also the first Winter Olympics where women were allowed to compete in every sport.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want, you can tell me what sport women were allowed to compete in that finally made it a full set.
Dana, this is all you.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for throwing that.
You're Mr.
No, I'm not.
Kinda, yeah.
He loves the sports.
Yeah. So, would this surprise us in that either the Winter or Summer Olympics would be one of the very, very early Olympics?
I suppose. It's hard to answer with the surprise us questions in the year of our Lord 2020. So I really couldn't tell you. But no, it's not one of the first Olympics.
Okay. All right. I don't know. I'd just be totally guessing. Yeah. Let's see. How about 1976?
That is incorrect. It is not 1976.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm just guessing on this.
That's fair.
All right.
So once again, what is the first Summer Olympics in which women could compete in every sport? And what was the first Winter Olympics where women could compete in every sport?
Okay, good. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Tom in California.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, is the Summer Olympics, is the sport wrestling?
It is not wrestling.
Oh,
you're not
the winter.
You're not terribly far off with wrestling, but it's not wrestling.
The boxing.
It is boxing.
Oh, okay.
Do you know which Olympics that was when?
How about the London? London maybe. 2012?
That is correct. London 2012 was the first Summer Olympics in which women could compete in every sport.
Wow.
Baseball was dropped that year, which women also could not compete in, and then boxing they let women box. So nice job.
But they did softball. I think they did softball.
I think, isn't softball new for this year? Or 2020, whenever they do the 2020? Because women will be allowed to compete in softball. But I thought that wasn't, that didn't happen yet. I could be wrong.
Could be. Okay, is the Winter Olympics, is it hockey is the sport?
It is not hockey.
Okay. Let's see. What I talk about when I talk about running is the great Haruki Murakami.
Yes, Haruki Murakami is correct.
And let's see, how about countries named for people? How about Kenya?
No.
No, for Kenyatta? No?
Yeah, it wasn't named for, I don't think that was named for Kenyatta.
Okay. Turkey or Ataturk?
Well, that's a good one. Yeah, but no. I think Turkey is like land of the Turkmen, kind of. It's not named for Ataturk. Ataturk is not Ataturk's real name. So,
Good point.
Yeah, so.
All right, I'll go with you. How about Saudi Arabia for I don't know if House of
yes,
Saud.
Yes, Saudi Arabia is. It's for, named for Mohammed bin Saud. Yes. Good job.
Chad for Chad Everett?
No. not so far.
All right. Okay, the most pardons, was that Carter because he pardoned all the draft
yeah.
Dodgers?
Good point.
Ooh, good. Good point. Not according to what I read. I've got somebody with even more. Although, as you are right to think that it was an industrial, you know, size pardon. It wasn't individuals. It was a mass pardonation.
Would this be something like? Was it Andrew Johnson who pardoned all the ex-Confederate soldiers?
That is correct.
Oh.
That is exactly right.
I wouldn't have done it without you, Tom. So there you go.
Ah, thanks. Well, yes. I'm happy for the SS.
Okay.
The Pulitzer Prize first and last initial. How about Don DeLillo?
Ooh, good guess. But actually, he has never won the Pulitzer for Literature.
Ah, okay. Sure. Okay. The Stradivarius guitar is probably not Lucille.
No.
Rivers, is the St. James in Raleigh?
It is not.
Is the White River in Salt Lake City?
It is not.
Okay, and is a coxcomb, is that like a cuckolder?
Say it again?
Is a coxcomb, is the uncommon user, is that a cuckolder?
Oh, no, can't get
not
that to
you. Not the cuckold, but, you know, the
yeah,
cuckolder.
Can't okay. do that. Can't give that to you.
And Magdalene, which is maudlin. Maudlin is
it
a,
maudlin? Thank you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a former prostitute.
Yes, a reformed prostitute. Yes.
Yeah, Mary Maudlin. Okay, and let's see, some questions. What Grammy-nominated recording artist is named... has taken his name from a novel from a purported ancestor from the 18th, who is an author, famous, very famous author.
Yeah, it's Moby for
oh, there
Herman
you go.
Melville,
yeah.
Moby Dick.
Good. Yep. Okay. And then what college, there's a state college in the United States which has a plaque in one of its dorms honoring a Grammy nominated and winning artist. So which college, what type of room is the plaque in, and why is it there? That may be very vague.
Yeah, it is kind of. But I don't know anyway.
I don't know.
Nope.
It's a California State College that way.
Yeah. No.
Mm-mm. I said Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. And the plaque is in a dorm bathroom.
No.
No, it's honoring Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, okay.
So
it's that slow, and that's where he recorded his very first single, My Bologna.
All right.
So it's recorded in a bathroom in a dorm at San Luis Obispo. Thanks a lot. Great
Thank
show.
You. All
Adios.
Right.
Bye.
Josh, you have a very short question?
I don't. I have a couple of long ones, but I can wait. But while we're here, I'm going to go back to the countries.
Yes.
Is the Marshall Islands named after George Marshall that he was there during the war?
No.
Is the Marshall Islands on this list for some other reason?
The Marshall Islands is not named after anybody who lived there. Let's put it that way.
Oh,
or
okay.
visited there.
Okay.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Oh, hi, it's Mark in the Tenderloin.
Hi, Mark.
I'm thinking maybe Columbia for Christopher Columbus.
He was never there.
Ooh.
Yeah, he was never there.
I'll try a few others. Monaco?
Huh. No. Monaco is, well, let's see, it's Monegasque. I don't think it's named after an individual that I know of. So.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And Tuvalu?
The Irish lullaby.
no, that means nine standing together. That's
good job. Oh. Good job.
Nine standing together.
Right.
Yeah, for the nine inhabited islands or some such.
Oh, okay. Now, coxcomb, I know there's a plant that's called the coxcomb.
Yeah.
It's like a red flower plant.
But it's not a plant.
Oh, okay. I guess I got a question. Let's try this one. What do these people have in common? Muhammad Ali, Matt Groening, Angelina Jolie, and Stevie Wonder.
All right, give the first name once more. I think I missed one.
Oh, Ali, Muhammad Ali.
Oh, okay.
Muhammad Ali, Matt Groening, Angelina Jolie, and
Stevie Wonder.
Wow.
And is this going to be a birthday or a place they were born kind of thing?
It's a family thing.
Okay.
So, let's see. I don't know much about their families. I know a little about Angelina Jolie, maybe, but yeah, go ahead, Kara, if you think you know.
Is it that they all have family members in the same line of business that they're in?
That's what I was thinking.
No.
Because of Layla Ali and John Voight, but
yeah,
the other two,
I wasn't sure. I mean, Matt Groening, I guess, he features his family in The Simpsons, kind of, but that's not really the same.
Anything to do with the parents not being married or being
divorced? No, they're all, Groening is married. He's got five. Well, I'll just let you know because I know it's getting late. They all have six or more children. Ali has nine or had nine. Matt Groening has seven. Jolie has six, mostly adopted. And Stevie Wonder has eight.
Oh. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi. This is Steve from Sunnyvale. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Right, so the not-so-good news is I'm looking at right now what I talk about when I talk about running by Haruki Murakami. I have the book in my hand.
There you go.
Somebody beat me to it. But the other good news is I have another Haruki Murakami book in my hand. The title is a famous pop song, rock and roll song. You might get this quickly, so I won't give you too much information. So do you know what the title of that book is? It's famous... rock and roll song.
Josh and I can say it together.
Norwegian Wood.
Okay.
Good job.
All right. Who wrote the lyrics? Oh, what is the group and who wrote the lyrics?
I think Lennon wrote the lyrics for
the
Beatles.
Yeah, that's right. Too easy for you. Okay. All right. So a coxcomb, is that something like a showy display? Isn't that like something on a...
Well, you're certainly on the right track. It's... And I think I'm just going to give it to you. It's a conceited or a dandy person. Yes.
All right. Yeah, it's something on a rooster's neck or
head.
Okay.
Right.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. Thank you. White River, is that in Vermont?
It is not. You're thinking of the White Mountains.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, Montpelier or whatever. Okay. All right. Well, great show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Ed in Massachusetts.
Hi, Ed.
I just lost coxcomb. I was going to get that one. Let me see. St. James, is that either in Montpelier, Vermont, or Jefferson City, Missouri?
Neither one,
okay. The initials on the Pulitzer writer, William Carlos Williams.
Ooh.
That's good.
That is good. I don't remember seeing him on the list, but it's possible that I... skipped over him because of the middle name. That's not who I had in mind.
I'll give you a small bill.
Well, and I don't know it either. Yes.
All right.
He may not be there anyway.
Well, I'm looking it up right now.
All right.
Go ahead.
And then I was gonna throw out Amerigo Vespucci as well for the country, knowing that it probably isn't really what you're looking for. So that's all I've got for guesses tonight. I've got a quick question for you. I came up with three Best Actor Academy Award winners who starred in what I consider outright comedies. Who are they? Now, they're kind of romantic comedy, but I think they're more comedy.
Did Did Jack Nicholson get one for As Good As It Gets?
Yes, he did.
He did. That's what. That's not really one that I'm considering comedy. It's not like what? Comic comedy. But okay, then yes, he did.
I want that bell. I want that bell.
There you go. I would. Yeah, I agree with you.
And you said best actor, so we're not counting maybe like Kevin Klein.
Maybe I should say, you know, more slapstick comedy or more.
But is actor not supporting actor like Kevin Klein in A Fish Called Wanda?
It's actor, not best actor, okay. Not best supporting.
Okay. Oh, I can only think of supporting people.
So, I'm sorry, I was looking up William Carlos Williams. William Carlos Williams won the Pulitzer for poetry. That's why I didn't find him. Right. I was only looking at fiction.
There you go.
So that's certainly Bell. So we're trying to think of best actor Oscar winners for comedies?
For comedies. And if we broaden it to romantic comedy, then I get 7.
Okay, but you're talking hardcore...
Slapstick.
Slapstick.
Yeah, no. Hmm.
Oh, well, Roberto Benigni in Life is Beautiful.
Is that a hardcore comedy?
Is that it's
no, no, not even.
No, maybe not.
He was
right.
Funny, but...
He was funny.
Yeah, but the movie
right. What about The Artist? Does that count as comedy?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Okay. You better tell us, Ed.
All right. I came up with Lee Marvin and Cat Ballou.
Okay, fair enough.
Jimmy Stewart and Philadelphia Story and Clark mm-hmm. Gable at Half One Night.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Ed.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate
good night.
It. Good night. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Elise in Richmond.
Hi, Elise.
Hi, the White River runs through Indianapolis.
It does, and thank you for getting that. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And that's all I got, but thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, Elise. Appreciate it. Okay, time to clean up here. And yes, the White River does run through Indianapolis, Indiana. And Kira, what do you have?
All right. The name of the only remaining playable Stradivarius guitar is Sabianari. The story of my experiments with truth is the autobiography of Mohandas Gandhi. Total Recall is Arnold Schwarzenegger. And
of course.
And Why Me is the second autobiography. The first one was Yes, I Can.
Sammy Davis Jr.
Sammy Davis Jr. And let's see, the first Olympics, Winter Olympics, where women could compete in every sport, that was 2014 Sochi when they finally let them ski jump.
All right. And Josh?
Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 2002 went to Richard Russo for Empire Falls. That's all I got.
Okay. And the state capital rivers, one nobody got, the St. James River, that runs through Dover, Delaware. let's see. The countries named after people who either lived or visited there. Ones we had left are Mozambique. That's Musa Ben Beek, who was a famous trader in the area. Eswatini. Named after, that's an a eponym, but named after Miswati II. And Uzbekistan, which is named after Uzbek Khan of the Mongol Empire. So
we should have four, one more.
No, that's it. That's all I have left. That's it.
Kiribati, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Bolivia.
Yeah. Saudi Arabia, I didn't write down.
Right.
I apologize. That's
and okay. I'm sorry, the words that have largely fallen out of use in English, the ones we had left are... Nithing, and feel free to speak up if you know what this is. Nithing is a despicable person. Peterman is a thief or a safecracker. Anyway, if you get your call, I do apologize. Thanks for listening today. My thanks to our panel. That would be Kira Pace, technical editor, and, of course, Josh Cosman from the San Francisco Chronicle. Thank you both. And, of course, thanks to you out there for taking the time to tune in and call in. Have a great week, everybody. We hope you will join us next Sunday at 7. My name is Dana Rodriguez. I've been your moderator. Have a wonderful evening, and hopefully we'll hear from you next week. Bye-bye.